Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
The Square Ball Podcast.
Welcome to the Square Ball Podcast, a special series of short podcasts for you around Moscow's book, 100 Years of Leeds United. With me is Moscow.
Am I not Daniel Chapman, author?
Best-selling author, should we go for that?
You could even say that if you like. Only in the Sunday Times, though, not other newspapers.
Not worldwide, yeah.
Yes, now the voice joining us on this Please, Please, Desperately Buy Moscow's Book podcast is Michael Normanton.
Hello.
I haven't sold enough.
What cut are we getting?
Are we back to the Turner twins with their cutting habits? There's a podcast throwback for long-time listeners.
Right, so story number one, then. As we urge you to go buy the audio book, which is available now from Audible, I have to say that, is that right?
Well, that's the key thing, is we've got some audio clips. There's like decent chunks of the voice of Screwfix is reading it. I forgot to look up how long the whole thing is. I think it's something like 7 hours you can listen to him. Once you hear his voice, you'll hear maybe why the 2013-14 season sounds particularly appropriate in this game of Warnock or Warnot that the Audible played with me. I didn't get to choose who read it. I just heard it and I was like, oh, he sounds a lot like, never mind. But because we've got these clips, we can do some stuff about them and play them out. And even if you don't want to buy the book, you get to learn something about Dick Ray.
Who has the best name of any football manager ever. Right then, so let's start off then this little episode with a tale of festive fun.
It's not exactly festive fun because it's Leeds fans. It's 1932, Christmas 1932, when Leeds fans, in the build-up to this, we'd just been promoted out of Division 2, again, Dick Ray's second promotion, which of course means he got us relegated in the meantime. But nobody was particularly happy about it. One fan described the promotion season at Elland Road as agony. Said the play was very poor, often ridiculously so. Gate receipts for the season were down by £7,500, which is a huge amount of money back in those days. And barracking of individual players was up to the point that the chairman, Major Albert Braithwaite, called it an absolute scandal. To be fair, they did only score 36 goals at home. And when you couldn't really, you know, you didn't get streams of away matches in 1932, it didn't matter what they were doing away. They were pretty bad at home, but they went up. And Dick Ray, being a stubborn old sod, who was really, he's quite Bielsa-ish in his refusal to buy players. He was insistent he will train the ones he's got, he'll find young players, make them brilliant, mould them, and everything will be great. And he did his first promotion, he inherited a team being relegated, kept them all together, took them up. They came down again, but he kept them all together, took them up again. And there were signs of life in 1932-33. We were going into Christmas, fifth, ahead of going to play Herbert Chapman's glamorous Arsenal on Boxing Day, who you might remember that Herbert Chapman started it. Well, he didn't start, but he was a Leeds City manager. Then we lost him. He went and he won a couple of tin cups with Huddersfield. And now at Arsenal, he's got the innovative WM formation, changing the tactical game. And they were that good, Arsenal. They'd just beaten Sheffield United 9-2. And they were runaway leaders at the top of the first division. Leeds went to Highbury on Boxing Day.
The Christmas Cracker, read the Leeds Mercury's headline. United have the pull. Arsenal go bang. In front of 55,876 people shrouded by fog at Highbury, Arsenal were outplayed. Keatley opened the scoring early in the second half, and although Arsenal quickly equalised, it was the only time United's aggressive defenders were beaten. Leeds had spirit, and 6 minutes from the end, Keatley headed the winner. Leeds moved up to joint second place. The return match was at Elland Road the next day. Tickets had been selling for weeks, mainly to people who wanted to see Herbert Chapman's innovative WM formation in action. Few had thought either match would be won by Leeds, but the United directors seized the occasion anyway, organising a presentation of the players to Lord Harewood and hoping for a performance that would make the city think Leeds were worth watching, as well as Arsenal. Victory at Highbury gave the day even more impetus. 56,796 was the largest ever crowd for a sporting event in Leeds and the largest in the country that day, and hundreds more watched from the new roof on the Lowfield Stand, or the old roof of the old Peacock Inn. Crowds climbed Beeston Hill for a view. The game was almost everything Leeds hoped for. Played at a frenetic pace, dictated by Leeds' relentless attacking. Edwards was back, and the defence became more important as Leeds tired, but the Millburns were tackling with the same efficiency that controlled Arsenal at Highbury. Hart was turning defence into attack, and Copping was described in one report as playing for death or glory. The crowd roared throughout, and although the game ended 0-0, nobody could complain about quality or excitement. By taking 3 points out of four from the Arsenal, wrote the Yorkshire Evening Post, Leeds United have achieved perhaps the greatest performance in association football in Leeds. What more could the public want?
Very much enjoyed Mr. Screwfix's enthusiasm there.
He's good, isn't he?
Buy any DeWalt combi and get a free bag of screws. It's kind of got a slight vibe of that about it. Do still buy it.
But it's very good. So was that what they wanted?
No. Well, Arsenal was what they wanted. You could get the biggest sporting crowd ever seen in the entire city of Leeds to go and watch Herbert Chapman's Arsenal. But yeah, a couple of weeks later, Leeds slightly messed it up by going to play Derby County away in their next game and losing 5-1. So when the reports come back in the newspapers, all the fans are reading that thinking, oh, bloody hell, Leeds again. And then the next match at home was Blackburn Rovers, 11 days after the Arsenal game, and the crowd was 14,043.
So what? So we'd had 56,000?
56,796, followed by 14,043.
We've had such yo-yo crowds over the years, haven't we? That's hilarious.
It is weird. This was the era when people started to ask questions about the Leeds United support. Because the character of Elland Road seemed to be different to even just up the road watching Hunslet Rugby League. I think I mentioned on the podcast before about how the atmosphere there was always seen as very supportive. As soon as the first whistle went, the fans would be cheering on the players and would support them from first to last. Whereas at Leeds, they were moaning about absolutely everything. It wasn't just the football. Although, yes, I found the quote. Hugh Whitfield in the Leeds Mercury commented that comments on home players at Elland Road could be so barbed, you would think you were among the fans of the other team. We were a bunch of sarcastic wankers, basically, in
what do you mean,
the
were?
Early 30s. Well, exactly. It does sound quite familiar. And some of the other moans that were going on were the ticket prices were too high, the price of car parking was too expensive, we didn't sign enough players, Bradford were signing players, even though they had a big overdraft. So we were pointing very much as we point at Derby, like, how come they can sign players under FFP? We're going, well, how come Bradford can sign players? They've got debt as well.
In those days, would you have been just maybe doing some drawings of Bailey Peacock Farrell's misdemeanors, saying, I know no one can quite understand this, but this is roughly where the shot was from. This is how his body shape was.
Recording it on a wax cylinder, doing a podcast on a wax cylinder.
And it's worth pointing out, we are second in the first division after the draw at Arsenal. So things are going pretty well, and it's been the
We'll fuck it up, we always do.
Well, that was the that's a little throwback to the first spell in the first division. Dick Ray got us up to fifth, and the expectation was that this was the first brilliant Leeds team. I thought we'd in with a chance of the title, got relegated. Absolutely just sank like a stone.
The Leeds way.
Yep.
People do wonder why we're damaged.
I mean, I was coming on to the other complaints, showmanship and personality, and one letter that I ended up titling this chapter after this, he wrote to the paper and said, for goodness sake, let's have a new band. They were really bored with the music that was being played before games as well. They didn't like the marching band.
And that's the big complaint, Ellen Road, is it?
That was one of the big complaints. The kit, again, also, it's not all moans and groans, but this is the idea that there was not enough showmanship and not enough entertainment at Elland Road started to give rise to the talk about whether we should change the kit, because we're still wearing at this point the blue and white stripes that Hilton Crowther brought with him from Huddersfield Town, although I'm still not sure it was because of Huddersfield, because this is when he was also lobbying the Football Association, saying that all kits should be standardised throughout all the football leagues so that every team wears blue and white stripes at home and every team wears red and white stripes away, and then we just don't worry about what they're wearing. So I think that's one of the reasons why we were wearing blue and white stripes. It was not because he wanted us to be Huddersfield, it's just because he thought everybody should, and that should be standard, like a Sabutio kit.
If you're choosing only three colours, why is one of the colours the same on both kits?
Yeah.
Seems like a poor choice. Why not have...
If you think back to photography in that day as well, it's all black and white photography, so you're going to get two sets of stripes in the paper. Why not have, like, on a pool table, spots and stripes?
Yeah, I'll just have someone in solid red and someone in white and blue stripes. I'm just saying, they didn't think this through.
Well, that's possibly one of the reasons why it didn't happen. What the city started talking about was that if the colours of the club were associated with the colours of the city, that would bring the crowds back. Everybody would have much more enthusiasm. And they proposed a new kit of dark blue shirts with a collar and cuffs of primrose, which was soon updated to old gold. People decided primrose is maybe not there.
What colour is primrose?
Gold, basically.
Okay.
I looked it up. I don't know why they started up saying, let's have it as primrose.
See, in my mind, primrose is a bit pinky.
I thought that as well. Yeah. I think of it as almost like a purple, pinky colour.
It's yellow.
Clearly no one knew. So
primrose,
anyway,
yellow, yes.
They did the right thing to choose a colour that people have heard of.
Well, they had meetings about it, and they were talking about it, and the Yorkshire Evening Post wrote that to thousands of people all over the country, Leeds means chiefly the association football team that plays at Elland Road. Anything, therefore, that is distinctive about the team and gives it a sense of character is surely all to the good. So everybody's thinking, right, yeah, new kit, let's do it. So they had a meeting, the directors thought about it, talked about it, and made a decision. They changed the socks. They used to have black socks with a blue and white top, and they were replaced by blue socks with a white top.
Revolutionary.
Big decision. And then all the complaints then was, hey, they haven't even got enough money for shirts, let alone players.
Did they have a third kit that was considered to look good with jeans?
Going back to this, just talking about kits and the change towards the city colours, do you ever wish we maybe still played in like blue and gold or something? Or do you think that we're so distinctive in all white?
Well, we're not that distinctive because we nicked the idea. So it's Real Madrid's, idea.
But equally, loads of teams playing blue. I just kind of wonder.
Yeah, but I don't know. I like the white. I'm settled on it now. I'd like to have the away kit as being still, at least occasionally, I'd like to see the halves brought back.
When you see the Leeds City kit, when they spent one season basically wearing Boca Juniors shirt, deep, really deep blue with just a yellow rectangular band across the chest, looks class. And I've always loved Boca Juniors kits. So I do kind of sometimes think that would be nice. But the problem is that's a different club as well. So it's kind of difficult to go back to that. But I say, you know, screw the rules. Let's have a Leeds City kit.
Funny how Leeds fans have always been fairly miserable, though, even back then.
Yeah, hard to please. I mean, 36 goals at home is not enough, I would say, even in a promotion season. So you could see there was a sense that the team was drifting on the pitch. Dick Ray was that stubborn about signing players that it just started to feel like everything was going really slowly. They finished eighth this season, and then they sold Wilf Copping, who was mentioned in that match report as playing for Death or Glory. Herbert Chapman took a fancy to him for Arsenal and told the board, we have to go and sign Wilf Copping, doesn't matter how much it cost, and it ended up being an absolute record fee. But Herbert Chapman actually died before the transfer went through. He was Leeds City manager. And if things had been different, if World War One hadn't broken out, if that all hadn't happened, he might have brought great success to Leeds City. So it was a bit of a missed opportunity with him. But he was that devoted to football that in the 30s at Arsenal, he went to watch a reserve game despite having essentially pneumonia. And that finished him off in the middle of a season. But they followed his instructions, nicked Wilf Copping off us for something like £8,000 or £9,000, which, again, is an enormous amount of money in that era, especially compared to what Dick Ray spent in his entire time in charge. He spent £3,000 in total on transfers in all the years he managed Leeds. But we still finished ninth without Wilf Copping. And it was only when we started dropping to 18th in Dick Ray's last season that everybody started to say, this is just, he wasn't keeping it fresh. We had good players, but they'd just been around too long. Players like Willis Edwards, who didn't leave the club until Don Revie was a player in the 1960, he finally left. He'd been working, he spent some time as manager, although he was rubbish, and then he worked as a scout and a coach. He'd been around since basically the start of the club, 1924, I think he joined. It was all, everyone's just like, oh, it's all the same. And the roof on the Lowfields was being built, that's mentioned in the Arsenal match report, but it was being built section by section because the supporters club were raising the money for it. So they would raise enough money to build a third of it, that would get built, and then they'd raise the money for the next bit and that would get built. So
go down Screwfix, get the stuff.
If Screwfix didn't charge so much, they could have done it all in one go, but they had to. So everything was just kind of going along all right. And I think I compared it in the book to, it's like a Rolls Royce, so it looks beautiful on the outside, but everybody else has got like much better engines now.
So many familiar themes that have run through Leeds United's history, even going back then. It's making me smile thinking about it.
Well, there's a lot in this that kind of, when you go to next stages in the story, you have the kit change. So Major Frank Buckley, when he came in, he changed the kit as well, only slightly. He just changed around the use of blue and yellow, exactly how it was looking. But he made a change. Then Don Revie came in and he changed the kits. And obviously the business of the crowds not turning up the rest of that season, after we had the 56,000 crowd, there was then the Blackburn one was 14,000. They didn't get in above 20,000 again all season for what was a top half first division campaign, which was rare in those days. Leeds had not been good up until this point. And that was always, Don Revie used to look around Elland Road and see it half empty and wonder what he could do to get people to come and watch this club. And yeah, and being a bunch of sarcastic bastards, it's not really changed.
What I find really interesting in this as well is the idea, and when you put it in the modern context, people say, well, what are you bothered about the kit for? Why does it matter if it's got a bit of platinum on it? Or, so what, it's only a badge. It's actually, when you place it in the historical context, you kind of realise how important these things are to the identity.
Yeah, people have always been saying that it should reflect the place that the club is from. And I suppose we did have a real strange start. This week is the week leading up to the Huddersfield game, and the Huddersfield Examiner is trying to whip up some interest in that as the sort of the Hilton Crowther derby, saying that, because it was 100 years ago at this time, Leeds were still playing their first season in the Midland League, the Reserve League, because we were hoping that Hilton Crowther would just bring Huddersfield to Elland Road and we would take over their place in Division 2 and just fulfil their fixes, and we would just bang, we'd have a second division football club. So the Huddersfield Examiner, I think they ended it with something like, all not Leeds are we, huh? So the origins of the club with this weird dalliance with being Huddersfield and borrowing their kit and stuff, we'd never really up to this point established ourselves as this is the Leeds club. And I think that may have nagged at people up to this point of like, well, what's it? Cause Leeds is a rugby town. Soccer's not really us. They don't even wear the city colours. They're named after a weird bird. What's the point? And then, you know, they'll go and watch Arsenal. Arsenal are very good with the cannon and the red shirts and the white sleeves, but Leeds' identity was not really set at this point. But people recognised it was important.
Just had a look at Primrose. It's kind of a mucky yellow gold colour, isn't it?
It's not far away. It's a synonym for what we ended up with, but gold just sounds a bit better.
Sounds more grandiose, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Well, thanks for that. We'll do some more on a different topic in the next little installment of this mini-series of podcasts. If you want to get hold of the book, you can buy it on Amazon. You can get the audiobook on Audible. And if you want to get hold of Moscow's book signed by the man himself and personalised, it is a little bit more expensive than Amazon, but they won't write in it for you, will they?
No, and they won't post it to you personally. It's my hands on the envelopes and my labels in the printer.
Go to thesquareball.net/book.
The Square Ball Podcast.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.